Welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché, and this is episode 100. On this week's episode, we've got upcoming, we have a special interview that we have with the new athletic director, Jeremiah Donati, that Ryan WC and I conducted earlier this morning. But right now, we want to take a little bit of time. I've got the Killer Frog Emeritus Wes Phelan with me, and we want to look back a little bit before we get to that interview, look back a little bit on the 100 episodes that we've done, and of course, we're looking forward to doing another 100 more. But Wes, what does 100 episodes mean to you?
You know what? When you told me a couple of weeks ago that we're in the 90s, I went, God, really? And I think it's great. I mean, we've survived 100 episodes.
And that's survives fantastic. A good way of saying it.
We've had some good ones. Yeah. Well, but you think back, it goes back to our days of Brewster's doing the Killer Frogs Hour. Of course, the ones we've done here, you know, just via Google Hangouts or whatever we use. And it's been fun. We've had some great guests over the years. I mean, gosh, we've had Matt Carpenter, LT, LaDainian Tomlinson, Evan Scowg, Brian Howard, Jim Schlossnagel, Regan Peebly. If you go back to Brewster's, we had tennis coach David Roditi. And we've had – oh, and then not to ignore our great Jill Kramer, our volleyball coach. We've had some great guests. And it's been insightful as a TCU fan. And I'm excited to hear what Jeremiah Donati has to say. And it's been great. We're looking forward to even more in the future. We plan on doing number 200 here as soon as we can. So let's keep it going.
Yeah, that let's get past 100 first. But I agree. I think we got another 100 UMO. But it's been a bit of a ride. I mean, we've had a lot of great guests, and by no means I want to do a roll call because I'll leave somebody out. Everything from players like Chucky Hunter to great coaches that we've had, both that are currently with TCU and those that have moved on in their careers, and chancellors and everything in between. So I mean, it's been great. It's been a great 100 episodes. I think that there've been a lot of really interesting points throughout this entire journey, and some interesting things that have happened, like the one time where the swimming coach decided to give you a Speedo with your name on it.
Yeah, and I walked into the house with that after that episode, and I said to my wife, "Look," and she said, "Don't plan on wearing that around this house." You know, and so I said, "Come on, honey." She said, "No, you probably can't get one leg into that thing." So and I've still got it. I had a friend over this weekend. And I said, "Look, hey," he said, "Oh my God, I just don't even want to go. I don't even want to think about you wearing that thing around the pool." You know, I said, "Oh, well, I do all the time. The people here in Sun City love it." Yeah, but of course, it was funny. It was fun. It's a great little keepsake to have. And thanks to Richard Sebesmuth for bringing it to me. And did he give Scott one as well, or is that just for me? Was that my honor to have that?
No, he gave you one, and I think there was a point in time right before beach volleyball started where I think Jill Kramer actually said that you guys could go out and face down her team, but you'd have to wear the uniform that they have to wear.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. She actually challenged Scott and I to play the girls, and we're not Top Gun and his buddy is volleyball playing friend from the movie. Scott and I don't look like those two guys. but anyway, that would have been ugly if we got there playing volleyball with them.
Why don't we go ahead and move on here, because we do have Athletic Director Jeremiah Donati. He joins us from his office at TCU. Ryan WC and I met with him for about 30, 45 minutes today, and we asked him all sorts of questions, including the story behind the infamous meeting between Chris Del Conte and DeLoss Dodds. And apparently, Donati was the quote-unquote staffer that Del Conte always talked about, who was actually a part of that meeting. So we get to hear from him how that meeting went and how all that transpired, because I know that's a meeting that's kind of slipped into legend, so to speak, around Horned Frog fans. We talk a little bit about expansion, a little bit about the transfer rules. We get to know a little bit more about Donati, where he came from, and how he came to TCU. So without further ado, hey, Killer Frogs, welcome to episode 100 of the Killer Frogs podcast. We have a special guest with us today, brand new athletic director, Jeremiah Donati. Athletic Director Donati, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for being here. Pleasure to be with you on your 100th podcast. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're just as surprised we made it this far as you. But we have a quick couple of questions here for you. We start off with, a lot of TCU fans aren't quite as familiar with your background as athletic director. You haven't been nearly as flashy on social media as the previous athletic director. And some of us have a couple of questions regarding your personal background. So to start off with, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from and how did you come to TCU?
Well, I came from, before TCU, I was working in Southern California. I went to law school there, but originally I was born just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. I grew up in Pullman, Washington. My father was a team doctor at Washington State, so I kind of developed my love for college athletics, running around the athletics department at WSU. And then I played basketball at a small school in Tacoma, Washington, the University of Puget Sound. And then I made my way to Whittier Law School, the alma mater of Tricky Dick Nixon, became a member of the California Bar before I went off into the real world, so to speak. So before I came to TCU, I worked as a sports agent for a very well-known sports agent, Lee Steinberg. I worked with him for almost 5 years before coming here in 2011. So I actually came to TCU, I'm jumping ahead here to your next question, which was, I was actually Chris Del Conte's lawyer. I was his agent, and I helped negotiate his contract from Rice to TCU. And after Chris had been in here about a year, the NFLPA was going through some labor issues, and Chris said, you know, what would you think about coming to work for me down here in Fort Worth? I could use someone I know as kind of a right hand to help us through some of this transition. And, you know, I told him, I said, no way, no how. And he kept persisting.
But
you know,
did you say no way because it was Chris asking you? Or did you say no way because it was Fort Worth?
I'd never been here. And so,
That's crazy, Texas.
And Chris, you know, and I was living in California at the time, and Chris said, look, this place is unbelievable. You got to come see it. So I came out, and the second I hit campus, I fell in love with the place. And this was pre-Big 12. This is a stadium that was halfway under construction. This is us kind of in the this is us in the Mountain West and kind of in the Big East, and you know, kind of in a lot of the construction you see around you right now hadn't even taken place yet. So this was 7-8 years ago, and I fell in love immediately, and I thought this place has a unique trajectory and certainly some place I would love to be a part of. I felt like home literally the minute I got here.
That's good. That's interesting to know. I didn't quite know that story, so that's pretty good story of how you got here.
Cultural shock, you know.
Yeah, which is funny is years ago, and I think you'd have to look this up, I think it was 1990 or 1991, Washington State played TCU here. And my dad, as the team doctor, came down, traveled with the team, and I remember thinking, listened on the radio going, what the heck is a horned frog?
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me that he tried to go for a run before the game, but it was too hot. So anyway, that was kind of how Texas Christian University, the first time I heard of them was 1990 maybe. Washington State beat TCU like 10-7 in what sounded like a barn burner.
Yeah. So. Well, at least you'd heard of us. That's better than
absolutely.
Some.
Well, I had to redo my entire closet because growing up, Washington State's arch rival is Washington, and so obviously they wear purple.
Yes.
And so if you were caught wearing purple around town, it was kind of like, you know, you were a Husky fan or something.
Yeah.
And so you always wore crimson. Well, obviously I'm not wearing crimson here.
Yeah.
And so my entire wardrobe is purple, but, you know, it's my favorite color. It's my daughter's favorite color, so.
That's good.
We love it.
Did you ever feel, being the fact that you were with Chris Del Conte for all those years, did you ever feel like you had to keep up with the Joneses as far as fashion?
You know, luckily I've always enjoyed clothes. My mom's an interior designer, so I think I've always kind of had a natural affinity towards that thing. Maybe not nearly to the level Chris does, but you know, I've maybe a little bit of the pressure, but I wasn't about to launch off into, you know, 85 suits or whatever he owns, 1,000 ties. So, by the way, I was a benefactor. of a lot of the ties that he left behind. So I get asked that a lot. That's awesome. What happened to those purple ties? Well, a lot of them ended up in my closet, and I distributed some of those to our development officers who wear a lot of purple. So he certainly couldn't take those with him. So I made sure that he put those in good hands.
That was nice of him.
Yeah, it's unfortunate he had a color shift, so to speak, to burnt orange. I'm glad those ties are being put to good use.
Yeah.
So you've come into this position after obviously your predecessor leaving school. What do you think is your biggest challenge so far as athletic director outside of, say, learning Twitter?
Yeah. Well, it's you know, the earth underneath our feet is moving pretty quickly or shifting pretty rapidly when you think about the college landscape. And so, you know, figuring out how you maintain your competitive edge is going to be ongoing. It has been, and it continues to, and it certainly will be. But when you talk about, you think about this NBA, the basketball reform and what that potentially looks like and how that could change the game and some of the rule changes that are coming down. And then of course it's a terrible cliche, but the arms race, you know, that every day I have a donor or an alum sending me a picture of some renovation or some stadium expansion or going around the country, and it's, you know, when are we doing baseball? And we already have people asking, you know, when we're going to do stuff to show my arena, which, you know, is for some brand new office here. Yeah. So my point is, it's ongoing. So I think a lot of the, to answer your question, is just managing those expectations and really prioritizing those, because, you know, it's difficult to tell a TCU tennis alum that, you know, it is important to look at redoing our indoor, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. And it can't happen tomorrow, and the resources aren't endless. And even though the Big 12 is a great position for us, it's not. We don't have unlimited budgets around here. So prioritizing those and managing expectations would probably be the biggest challenge, I think, that I go through every day.
Well, as you're talking about that, we know doing the stadium. Mm-hmm. What's after that? Got a game plan as far as what you're kind of working with next?
Yeah, I mean, I think the next big thing would probably be Lupton Stadium. You know, I've already talked to Coach Schlossnagel and the Chancellor about, hey, and this won't happen tomorrow, but sitting down and saying, okay, what do we want this facility to look like? I mean, I've always said that, you know, you'd love for that stadium to have more curbside appeal. You know, you'd love to pull up to it and have maybe a different exterior. You know, there's an opportunity for a club? Is there an opportunity for more suites? Is there an opportunity to do some things, some player stuff that makes for a better experience for the student athletes? Is there things you can do that make for a better fan experience? So I'd like to start, you know, with a kind of a blank slate and say kind of what are our needs, wants, and wishes, and then start there to see, okay, what's realistic? You know, is it something where you, is it, and, you know, I'm not saying we do this, is it a total redo? Is it just a couple things we could do? That would probably be the next big facilities project down there. Of course, you know, you've got, at some point, we'll probably add a sport. I don't know what that sport is right now, but at some point that could require.
Is that because of the Title IX situation?
Yeah, it would be a Title IX requirement. I won't go too far into the Title IX laws, but because we are so far out of balance comparatively to our student body, male versus female ratio, we're going to be most likely adding a sport every few years. You know, we added beach volleyball about 4 years ago. So sometime on the horizon, probably not right around the corner, but somewhere down the street is we'll add a sport. So, you know, we'll have to make all sorts of, you know, I've already been asked about softball.
I'm tired of OU winning every year.
Well, gymnastics is a good one. You know, gymnastics is a great one. There's someone sent me, ironically, some information that there are more kids in high school competing in gymnastics than any other state, and it's like not even close.
Oh, yeah.
So am I saying we're going to do gymnastics? No, but we'd certainly take a look at it. Because we'll take a look at, okay, what are we trying to accomplish? Is it headcount? Is it merely the fact of adding a sport? Does that help us get in a better place from a Title IX perspective? Where can we be competitive? I frankly don't want to add a sport just to add a sport. I mean, I want there to be some kind of runway or path to being competitive like the rest of our sports. So those will all be considerations we look into. But to answer your question, if I had to answer right now, my knee-jerk reaction would be Lupton Stadium would be the next kind of big thing we look at from a facility standpoint. And we'll always do little things with football, for example, redoing the practice fields this summer. We're going in and redoing the locker room. So you're constantly, as far as when you take a look at our economic engine, it revolves around football. So those will be, we've got to make sure that we maintain a competitive balance there. So I'm sure there'll be another project coming down the pipe soon. It may not be a massive $100 million project, but something that we can do to continue to keep the program moving forward.
Well, speaking of that, how is the remodel of the east side coming along?
Great. Well, when you walk back out to your cars, you can tell me. I haven't been out there yet today, but yeah. I saw they did put up the fence around it, the security fence. So, you know, we hit our first, the project will be about $100 million. We've cleared $60 million from a fundraising standpoint, which was key because that got us shovels in the dirt, so to speak. We're right on target from both a fundraising standpoint. Fundraising is still ongoing, but from a construction standpoint, we'll be ready for September 1, 2019. And that was the key, was really getting started by June 1st to make sure that we could get there in 15 months. So we're in good shape.
And what sort of policy, how is this going to affect this season as far as East Side fans are concerned?
not much. The Turner Construction has a plan. When they gave the pitch to us, one of the things they were very cognizant of was game day and making sure they were out of the space. The space was secure. If you go back to 2011, as I know it, or as I've been told, the city required that we couldn't have night games. Well, it was a different television contract. We've been assured that's not the case this year. So, you know, we've already announced a night game Thursday night versus Texas Tech. So that we won't be restricted there. There'll be a little bit of an adjustment this year with Frog Alley, which will be the biggest probably game day. As far as ingress and egress, there won't be much of an effect, but there will be Frog Alley, the pregame, that'll be kind of repurposed out here. The Frog Walk now, if you look out the window here, and I apologize for the viewers at home, can't see it. But, you know, the Frog was repositioned in front of Shulman Arena, so the football team will walk up towards Shulman Arena, be able to tap the Frog on the nose as they walk into the locker room, which will be kind of a neat thing for what we call Tent City out here. So that'll be, ultimately, I think we'll do that permanently. I think the new drop-off area for the football team will be on Stadium Drive right out here in front of the blue, which will be kind of more of a grand entrance, if you will. So
will the vendors be out here in front of the Shulman then?
Yeah, we're still working through kind of the displacement plan, if you will, but we will put some of them over here, and then ultimately when the east side is complete, you know, Frog Alley will eventually be kind of a longer, you know, bigger activation, if you will, because the east side will come into Frog Alley, so we won't have both sides of Frog Alley to work with, that street down there, so we're in the process of kind of reinventing that experience, but it certainly won't be diminished, it'll just look a little different.
I'll be glad. I want to switch gears.
Got it.
I'm intrigued by two new rule changes.
Okay.
And I just want to get your take. One is the transfer rule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just, you know, I mean, you think that's a good thing or you know, I don't know. I just look at it and I just think it's such an interesting rule the way they changed it.
Well, it's just, you're talking about going from, instead of asking for permission, just the notification.
Yeah, notification, and they can transfer anywhere, can't they?
Well, you can make rules within your conference to restrict. Like one of the things the Big 12 is looking at is can you, you know, do we have a rule where we restrict recruits going from TCU to Texas Tech or Texas Tech to TCU?
So they can still have you can't have a rule for the conference.
Yeah, the conferences can make their own rules. And that's something we've discussed that I'm sure will pick up some steam. You know, generally speaking, I like one uniform rule for transfers.
Yeah.
They're still working through some things that there's, you know, they've talked about, is there going to be an academic benchmark, which was opposed by me and many of the other athletic directors, because I think it has an unintended consequence of potentially punishing football and men's basketball student athletes, which are primarily African American. And I think that the disparate impact of that is something that I don't think we really want. We don't want to go there. It's certainly not something that we see as fair. So overall, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the student athletes, and I think it's something that was well received and definitely seen as a kind of a victory, if you will.
Well, you explained a lot though right there about saying that y'all can make your own rule, because I was thinking, boy, that, you know, when you start talking about in conference and stuff, and that gets, I mean, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, Commissioner Bowlesby says this all the time, and I use this quote, is that, you know, good fences make good neighbors.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got, when you sit in, say, a Big 12 athletic directors meeting, I mean, we're all friends and colleagues outside of this, and we know that, you know, whether it's Oklahoma State or Texas or Baylor, I mean, we're kind of one family, yeah. The conference is, and so we really need to have, we need to be lined up that way. And so I think if you just open yourself to a lot of really potential negative stuff, can you imagine if TCU and Baylor are getting back and forth and that stuff? So I think that that'll be kind of the next step I foresee as our conference, is that we'll probably have some restriction, some intra-conference restriction for transferability.
Well, that makes a lot more sense. I mean, just the end conference, yeah, because like you said, well, you start.
Yeah, the poaching, and you get it. It could get kind of ugly. And so I think, you know, that we certainly haven't voted on it, but there was a lot of support in the room for that. And so I think that'll pick up steam.
Now, does that rule only cover interconference? Like, in other words, under the NCAA guideline now, like, for instance, LSU, couple years back, basically denied a kid transferring to TCU because it was TCU.
Well, that would take away, this new rule would take that away.
Take that away.
Yeah, in other words, you know, if you had a baseball student athlete who wanted to transfer to, you know, from Arkansas to TCU in the past, you have to get permission to contact and go forth, and now they just provide the notification, the written notification, and they could go where they want, barring some intra-conference rule that said you couldn't go from Arkansas to LSU. Okay. The conferences are free to make up.
That makes a whole lot more sense to me.
But it only governs the conference members. Yes. It doesn't.
Correct.
So, like, they couldn't say in the SEC, well, you can't transfer to any other SEC school or TCU.
Correct.
They couldn't do that.
Correct. That would have to be presented and voted by those athletic directors.
All right. The second deal is, I think it's interesting, is the redshirt rule now.
Mm-hmm. For football?
Yeah, for football. Yeah, I mean.
Well, go ahead.
I'm just trying to understand it. I mean, you know, way back when I played, you know, you could play up to those first four games. Mm-hmm. And then if you got, you know, I'm sure there was some mystery injuries there, you know, but you could go ahead and get redshirted going down. But now, the way the rule is now, that you have four games throughout the year, basically.
That you could play in and still maintain that that year, if you will, within the five. And look, for a sport like football that is as violent, if you will, and where the injury rate is much higher, you know, we like it. Coach Patterson liked it. He and I had a long conversation about it before it ever got to that point. And one, you get a chance to play some more players and get them some experience, but two, it probably reduces the risk of injury because you don't have the same, you know, players out there. So we liked it. I mean, I think, you know, part of the only negative feedback from a lot of the athletic directors I spoke with was, well, now can it go to other sports? Now, when is basketball going to say this, and when is baseball and track and all the rest of it? And I think the unique nature of football is the physicality of it. And so I think, you know, for now, I'd rather do what's right by football rather than worrying about all the other sports coming through now. So I think it'll be a welcome addition. They've got some details and some fine points to work out. The bowl game, does that count? That type of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how it's the implementation of it is. But I think overall, I think it's a positive thing. I know Coach Patterson agrees.
Well, I think it makes sense. I mean, you know, you get first guy, team guy gets hurt, second team guy, they might be back in a week or two or three, but all of a sudden you're left real thin in some spots and stuff like that for a younger kid to be able to jump in and help. Maybe that one game or two games, and then all of a sudden, but to be penalized for a whole year, you know, that's terrible.
You know, and we're really under the gun, you know, to make that game as safe as possible, and rightfully so. One of the things I think you'll find that it's not going to happen next year, but, you know, they're talking about, you know, the, one of the there's statistics out there that show that the kickoff is one of the most dangerous plays in the game. You know, the concussion rates, severe, significant injury is much, much higher on kickoff. So they're finding ways. You see, one of the new rules is now is you can fair catch any time and get the ball placed at the 25-yard line. I think eventually you're gonna find the kickoff will go away altogether. Mm-hmm. I think we're constantly going to be trying to find ways to make the game as safe as possible. And there comes a point when it's not rocket science. Limiting violent collisions is the best way to do that. So limiting the plays in which you can do that and something like the kickoff, I think you'll find will ultimately kind of be a thing of the past.
What about punts, though?
Well, I mean, I can't speculate on that. I mean,
That's hard.
Yeah, I mean, all I've heard is just the kickoff is the rate of injury is so high. That's something that they've really kind of looked at and say, hey, there's an opportunity to keep guys out of harm's way here if we, hence the new fair catch rule. And I think ultimately, you'll see it first, I think, in the NFL is that I could see that play going away, or at least even greater restriction placed on it. Because I think when you look at the rate of concussion and all the rest of it, it's a way to make the game safer pretty quickly. So just a hot sports opinion from him.
No, that's the difference of punt and kickoff. I mean, kickoff, everybody's starting off on a full blast run.
Yeah,
and they're the space in between.
Yeah, I mean, think it's like two sets of gladiators going at each other. I mean, it's pretty rough.
Speed.
It's easy to understand why there's a lot of injuries that occur on that play. So.
Priority points are a huge deal, mm-hmm. all right, to the fans. And then for TCU, it's a huge deal to get fans to all of the games. Is there going to be any change when buying, say, for example, volleyball or soccer, the different season tickets for the other sports where we could actually build our priority points by buying the season tickets?
Well, you do earn priority points for buying season tickets for mm-hmm. for the other sports. I mean, one of the things we're constantly looking at is especially with these new tax laws is how priority points are awarded. It's changed a lot. And frankly, in my old role, one of the things I did was we were able to get priority points awarded for non-athletic gifts. We really wanted to show that at a school as small as TCU that, you know, we've got fewer donors, frankly, and there's a lot of our donors are supporting athletics, but they also want to do something in business or nursing, mm-hmm. and they're saying, hey, I still want to go, and but, you know, for whatever reason, I want to participate here. We wanted to make sure that they were getting credit here because we don't have 500,000 Livin' alums, and we certainly don't want to be pushing people away. We want to be more inclusive. We also, you know, our point system's a little bit probably more generous, I'd say, than we benchmark probably 20 other schools, public, private, big school, little schools across the country to get kind of a good set to model ours after. You know, we haven't had an in-depth discussion specifically about, say, our Olympic sports and how we're going to weight those. I mean, we want to the overarching idea is that we want to reward the people that are the most supportive. And so that's one of the reasons we've really drilled down on you know, giving and to support Frog Club members and the contributions they're making, stadium donors who are making big financial a big financial outlay that they're getting something in return. But we'll continue to look at it. I mean, I think now with the tax laws and now that you're not, you know, now that you can't get tax credit anymore for those seat donations, which was a huge not distraction, but just a huge hurdle we had to get around and over to start the season with. That'll change things, frankly, going forward. And it's probably going to take a year or two to really figure out what the new landscape looks like. But I could see our point system getting even another overhaul just in response to some of that tax stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I know we're coming to the end of your time with us, and we do appreciate you spending time to sit down with us today. One last question or story we've been asked to kind of talk to you about, and it kind of stems back to, as you mentioned, your previous position with Chris Del Conte. As Chris likes to explain it in his meeting with DeLoss Dodds during that whole Big East, Big 12 kind of fiasco, he had a staffer in that meeting. Apparently you're
the
staffer.
I was the staffer. I was the mystery staffer. Yeah, the I get asked this question a lot because it sounded a little bit far fetched. You know, I'll go to these alumni. I used to go to these alumni events with Chris, and he'd get asked about it, and people would ask me. They say that there's no way that really happened. I said, actually, it did. I was there. So as the story goes, I just started here. I remember the date because it was the Wednesday after we played SMU and lost at home. It was so 2011. So Chris calls me on the Tuesday night, you know, two, three days after the game, and says, hey, you know, I need you to prepare this information. We're going to go down and we're going to go meet with the Lost Dodds in Texas, and we're going to make the case that TCU ought to be in the Big 12 and et cetera, et cetera. So I worked with a guy named Scott Cole, who's now the interim athletics director at South Florida. We prepared a bunch of stuff, the giving totals and licensing, and, you know, basically showed the rise of TCU, if you will, over the past 10, 15 years. And I mean, we had these folders, you know, these binders, three ring binders all lined up. And next morning I pick them up, get in the car, we're driving down there, and we get, you know, we're cruising down, we're probably 2 hours into the drive. And I turn to him and I go, what time is our meeting with him, by the way? And he looks at me and goes, oh, we don't have a meeting. And I mean, I just about drove off the road. I'm like, are you kidding me? We don't have a meeting with the Lost Dodds. How do you know he was even in town? I mean, so this is like, you see like Austin, next exit, you know, next 15 exits or whatever. So we pull up to and their offices, I guess, have moved. We pull up to the old offices and we park this. I couldn't find a parking space. We park this thing. The hazard lights are on and we go up. We're wearing purple ties. We walk in. Delos's assistant stand there, and we look like we just walked off of Mars. And she figured out pretty quick who we were, and she just says, you know, just have a seat. I'll see if Mr. Dodds is in. And you know, I'm sitting there. I go, Chris. I go, we're gonna get towed. You know, he goes, well, just go down, wait in the car, and if I need you to come back up. So I go down, sit in the car. An hour passes. 2 hours pass. You know, we're kind of texting. He goes, you know, no word yet. And then finally, I'm moving the car all around the, you know, around the athletic department, around campus, trying to find a place to park. And finally I get this text from him, and he says, headliners come to, or come, it was kind of a cryptic, you know, if you know Chris, you know, I'd go on record saying he wasn't sometimes the most clear communicator via text message, a lot of emojis, but this is like pre-emoji, this is like before emojis were a thing. So I'm looking up headliners, trying to figure out what the heck he's talking about. I finally figure out that headliners is like a social club in downtown Austin. It's kind of like Fort Worth Club here. Mm-hmm. And he and Delos are apparently there, so which is not where I'm in. So I get in the car, I go find this place, and this is, you know, broad daylight. It's like today, it's like now, you know, 4:30 in the afternoon maybe. And I go up there, and Chris and Delos are sitting in this room. I don't think the restaurant was open yet, but they're sitting there. They may have had an adult libation in front of them or two. And I sit down with them, and Chris is put on the full court sales pitch, and Delos reaches over and puts his hand on Chris's and says, I'm done talking with you. I want to hear from him. Points at me. And you know, got to remember Delos is, you know, he's a legend in our industry. Yeah. This is my first meeting with him, and I'm sitting here going, what in the world is going on? So anyway, long story short, we have this great meeting with Delos. He gets up. He's got to go to an alumni event. And Chris and I are kind of on cloud nine. You know, we're on this high. We feel like it went really good. We get in the elevator, and we go, either that was the best meeting ever, or he's totally full of it and just, you know, just giving us the business. So long story short, we're driving back, and this is kind of the magic in Chris. The whole drive home, you know, he's calling up his Big 12 brethren and colleagues saying, hey, I had this, you know, vote us in, you know, da, da, da. Well, the next morning I got to work early, and Chris texted me and he said, are you here? And this was pretty early. It was like 7:15, 7:30 in the morning. I said, yeah. And he comes, and I didn't know the context, right? And he comes to my office, and he's got this huge smile on his face. And he goes, listen to this. And he played a voicemail from an AD that I won't name his name, but it said something like, I don't know what you guys said. I don't know what you guys did down there, but you guys are in. We're pushing forward with TCU as wow. The next member here. So wow. I don't know how it happened, but that's a true story. You know, we went down there kind of blind faith, and Chris felt like we had a shot to get in front of Delos, who held obviously a lot of influence and clout. And they were they saw what we could bring to the table, and it was, you know, it turned out to be a great day for us. So,
yeah.
Wow. So it's a true story.
That should be a holiday at TCU.
Yeah. Well, you know, Chris was, I learned a lot from my time working with Chris. Chris is obviously a dear friend of mine. It's funny to think I was his attorney, and then I was his employee, and then now we're colleagues. So, you know, we talk every few days or so, and he'll ask me, "Hey, how did we do this at TCU?" And I'll ask him, and I'll say, "Hey, did you really say that to him?" Or, you know, so we have a fun relationship. Our families are really close, so it's even though he's wearing a different color, we're still very friendly.
Yeah,
that's good to hear. Well, thank you again for sitting down and talking to us on our 100th episode. Really appreciate it. We look forward to everything you're going to do for Horned Frog and Purple Nation from there on out.
Thank you. It was my pleasure having to be with you.